10 years ago, the only really form of identity theft protection was monitoring your credit. Nowadays, a lot of the more premier companies are offering what we call identity protection or identity monitoring. And that is due to the fact that the FTC shows that credit monitoring only captures about 17% of identity theft, meaning credit monitoring will capture if you open a new account, a new credit card, a new Macy's card. But identity monitoring is looking beyond that. It's looking to see if your identity is being used to commit a crime, on a sex offender registry, to take out payday loans, and any other various public records. So what we're seeing now is that identity theft protection is well beyond credit monitoring. Credit monitoring is a component of it, but identity protection is more about monitoring all aspects of your identity that a thief could use to create fraudulent accounts or fraudulent actions.
So as a subscriber to these services, either given to you by a company or agency, or you buy it on your own, what is the product? Do you get a monthly report? What are you actually buying?
So the majority of the identity protection products out there, you enroll and you get what's more of a baseline set of reports. It's all the historical information about you. It could be a credit report, it could be a criminal report, public records. And the goal is to look at everything on that report and see if all that information belongs to you. If there's an information that doesn't belong to you, and you might have someone else's name on your public records report, or you might have a criminal record that doesn't belong to you, then you call in to our service and we will work to restore that identity for you. Then on a monthly basis, we will monitor your identity and send you alerts if there's a new credit account, if there's a new payday loan, if there's a new criminal record or a new public record. Then you look at those alerts and you determine once again if it is you. And then if it's not you, then we'll take action to help you remediate that.
All right. And Kevin, in this whole OPM affair, what is the Windveil part of this?
Sure. So we brought, our job is to find best in class, best of breed technologies. And so if you look at our technology or partner portfolio, we've got about 50 organizations that we work with. And so we've had a relationship with CSID since, I guess, going back to about 2009, where we've provided these types of solutions, granted not at mass, like we're talking about the OPM breach, but to state of Florida, Department of Interior, et cetera. As recent as about 4 or 5 months ago, we actually formed an organization called Dark Web ID to take a lot of this data that's being, you know, harvested out on the dark web and bring it to government agencies, government contractors. And so we've been pretty proactive, pretty strong relationship with CSID.
Just to clarify, information from the dark web is different from what was taken from OPM in their database. That was just somebody's corporate information.
So dark web monitoring is basically, we have analysts and bots that sit on the dark web, which is basically the black market where identity thieves buy and sell information. It's a proprietary technology of ours where we capture that information as being bought and sold. And as a member, if you're enrolled into the OPM breach response program, we will alert you if any of your information is being compromised in that aspect. And it doesn't necessarily have to be related to the OPM breach. There are victims of identity theft on a go-forward basis. Probably 1 to 2, 3 out of 10 people are already a victim. They just don't know it. Their identity's been stolen. It's just there's not a fraudulent event that has occurred, and it can be totally unrelated to OPM.
And so have you used Tor or some kind of search of the dark web to discover whether any of this particular data sets have ended up in the dark web? Do we know that yet?
We have our own analysts that work in the dark web on a daily basis, and we've seen nothing to give us any indication that any of the OPM information has ended up on the dark web yet.
All right. And Kevin, you said that you have worked with CSID and other accounts. And typically, what is the take-up rate of people that are offered this service? The other day, Beth Cobert, the new director of OPM, said about 20% of the eligible people have actually signed up. Is that out of band, or is that about normal?
It's actually something really to highlight in this instance. If you look at other breaches, publicly available breaches or publicly known breaches, like the state of South Carolina, state of Texas had a breach, those average enrollment rates were in the single digits, low single digits, 3%, 3.5%. The large Anthem data breach, which affected 80 million individuals, they had less than a percent of a take-up rate. We're over 20% at this point, probably closer to 21%. So we have over 900,000 people that have successfully enrolled in the program. So from that perspective, if there is a silver lining, there is a phenomenal uptake rate.
We're speaking with Kevin Lancaster. He's CEO of Windveil, and Joe Ross is president and co-founder of CSID. And getting to the specifics of the OPM, let's talk about the contracting for a minute, because there have been congressional critics of the way OPM let that contract when there's so many large players in this? And they frankly saying, you know, where did Windvale come from and how can they possibly be the winner of a contest like this? Was it competitively bid and what happened from your perspective?
Yeah, it was absolutely competitively bid. It was interesting. It was a Friday morning, I think it was May 29th, 6:44 a.m. I got an alert, a notice from FBL, FBL.gov. You know, it's kind of a best practice that we teach a lot of the Windvale clients, the consulting clients. But got an alert and started going through it. At first, I thought they were actually looking for policy support in developing privacy response. But in looking at it further, you know, and looking at the response deadline, you know, we realized there's a day, basically day and a half, 2 day turnaround on this solicitation. So we started going through it and looking at what they're asking for. And we brought in CSID. But again, you know, we're looking at a lot of these, you know, technologies, you know, out in the marketplace, which ones we feel would be, I guess, the best fit for this type of procurement. And so we literally had 36-hour turnaround, and the teams worked, I mean, diligently to really put in an effective solution. And that's another thing to highlight. The solicitation called for credit monitoring, and that's a very important part of this program. As Joe highlighted previously, that's a lot of the non-credit elements of what CSID can bring to the table that are really, I think, you know, put us over the top in this procurement. We've got statistics on the number of credit alerts over the last month relative to the number of cyber-related alerts, so your social security number, your date of birth, your email address being found on the dark web. And those alerts are outpacing the credit element alerts 3-1.
So there is activity. It just may not be specifically in the credit area.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of activity in the credit area, and the product's doing what it should be doing. It's notifying you that there's some type of credit alert. And the vast majority of those, and Joe could probably speak to those percentages a lot better, but almost every single one of those are related to an actual account that a consumer has opened, you know, not a fraudulent account, but a credit card or a home loan. So the product's working very well from that perspective.
Okay, we'll turn to Joe in just a minute, but briefly, that 36 hours, that's something that is unusual.
It's unusual, I guess, from a federal standpoint. But if you look at the average contract times or lead times for an incident like this, at times you're dealing with hours. You're dealing with it maybe 2 to 3 days turnaround to respond to a solicitation, RFP, RFQ.
So it looked to you like an industry best practice almost.
It is. I mean, the vast majority of the time when you have an incident like this, a breach, what you're doing the first several days, several weeks, is you're doing forensics. You're trying to figure out what happened, what got compromised, what is the magnitude of what got compromised. We certainly feel for OPM in that, you know, they have so many different constituents that they have to, you know, work with on a daily basis to bring in forensics, you know, DHS, DOJ, you know, what have you. So our understanding is that they spent a lot of time up front trying to figure out what really happened, what was the magnitude of the breach. And it is, it's industry, I don't know if you want to call it best practices, but credit monitoring, identity monitoring, you know, organizations are oftentimes the last companies brought in because that is the ninth hour before they're required to, you know, make public notifications of these breaches. And then Joe, you might have some more insight into that.
Yeah, Joe, is this your first federal gig for CSID?
No, we've done several other breaches with Windvale in the past, and we've done breach remediation services for the state of Texas, for South Carolina, and for several other large clients. And even though CSID doesn't have a household name, what we are is a B2B to C provider. So we provide businesses with products and services. So if you look at Javelin's top 10 identity theft protection companies, we provide the products and services to 8 out of 10 of those companies. So this is really what we specialize in, is coming in, and it is a typical short-term response, because when you find a breach, the goal is to analyze it, figure out who was impacted, what data was compromised, and then to notice those individuals as quickly as possible.
So what happened with the telephone response that seemed to really sink, you know, under the weight of response, and CSID seemed to be unable to handle it? What happened there?
Right. So the original plan was to offer identity theft protection and call services to those that were affected by the breach. This breach was a little bit different. With all of the press, we had two populations, those that were affected and those that thought they were affected. And originally, the goal was to notice those that were affected and include the 800 number on the notification so we could manage those calls and better service those people. About 2 or 3 days into the breach, the decision was made to make that 800 number public because a large number of people wanted to know if they were affected. And that's when we ran into the call volume. We had to continue ramp. We added about 165 reps in a little over a week. So when the decision was made to open the phone lines up, that's when we had the longer hold times. But it was the right thing to do. These people were wondering if they were impacted. And in that first 2 weeks, over 50% of our calls weren't people that were affected. They were people that thought they were affected. And these calls are longer than normal talk times because people want to know what's going on. They want to know, I didn't get a letter. Am I affected? So we would manually look them up, see if they were affected. And if they were, we would give them their PIN code over the phone.
And Kevin, the emails came from a .com. And again, in your federal experience, was this, in retrospect, the best way for OPM to notify people?
I don't know if that would be considered industry best practice. It was determined because of the time frame, and I think the quality of the data that OPM had on individuals, that it might be a more effective approach.
That is to say, the quality wasn't all that great?
It actually was pretty good. By comparison, if you look at the percentage of bad addresses or people that we can't reach, it's actually very low relative to other breaches in the past. But yeah, there's certainly some debate on whether emails should have been sent versus paper notifications, but that was not something that we had control over. We certainly present best industry best practices, but you know, we did what was called for in solicitation.
And right. Joe?
One thing to note on that, there is a difference in cost as well. Sending out, it is taxpayers' money. If sending out U.S. postal mailers are going to be 40 to 50 to 60 cents, depending on whether you're doing bulk, first class, or certified. Email is a very low-cost manner. And if you have emails and you know the emails are accurate, then that is considered an acceptable means. One of the complications that did arise is, unlike in the private sector, you have one company with one company policies. OPM was the vendor, but OPM was servicing tens and 20, 30 different agencies. And each agency had their own policies around emails, securities, and protocols. So managing the different agency protocols was a bit of a challenge during the email notifications.
All right. So the next chapter in all of this is the 21 million person breach. And I guess the 4.2 and the 21.5 have 3.6 in common. So whatever it is, the net result is another 18 million people or so, roughly. We don't have to do the math on the air. What is going on with respect to notifying those people?
Honestly, we don't know. We're not privy to, I guess, OPM's future plans, forward-looking plans. We stand ready. You know, we have got scale and capacity, but that's not a decision that we're involved in making. That's an OPM decision.
And having had all of this happen in the spotlight, you know, I mean, national press and international covering all of this, what lessons learned from a corporate standpoint or a supplier standpoint have you learned that you would advise, you know, future customers and future vendor partnerships to follow should something this in the spotlight this intensely occur again?
I think there are quite a few lessons learned. You know, I think one of the big ones, you know, is really just project plan. There are so many different hands in this breach response, you know, OPM, again, DOD, DHS. I mean, every agency was impacted by this breach. And so we came out with a project plan. It was pretty solid based on total number of notifications to be sent every day, emails versus, you know, paper notifications, mail notifications, somewhere along the way that was deviated. So we got into a position, you know, probably about a week and a half in where there was a void for a couple of days of sending emails. And within a 36-hour period, we had to send 1.2 million emails. And so, you know, we certainly understand and empathize with the folks that were trying to call into call centers and trying to get to, you know, networks or get to the login pages, registration pages, because that was an insane volume of notifications in such a condensed window.
It made you a spammer almost. You have to have those kinds of techniques.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's almost DDoSing yourself. We were kind of, you know, talking about that because you're sending out so much volume and you can see the spikes. A couple minutes after you send out 100,000 emails, you see a significant spike in enrollments. And through the thick of this, I mean, I think there was one day we had over 105,000 enrollments.
And it was over 112,000. Yeah. We were seeing hours where there was, you know, 12 to 15,000 an hour enrolling.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're buying tickets online. You're entering a lot of information. You're pulling back 3-4-page reports. So it was a very strenuous process.
And just getting back to the original breach here and knowing the data that was taken, what are the factors that you would consider in what services specifically to offer? In other words, could you say to an agency in the future, well, you don't need all of these services, but you definitely need these, as opposed to just giving everyone the whole suite of possible services?
I think the key thing is we've focused on is identity monitoring. You have to have more than just credit monitoring, because the information, social, name, date of birth, isn't just about creating new credit cards. It's identity thieves know. People have BillGuard, they have Yodlee, they have all these free services, Credit Karma, Credit Sesame. They're free credit monitoring services. A lot of people have those. So identity thieves are moving away from that. So you need to ensure that you have payday loan monitoring, criminal and court records, sex offender, public records, internet surveillance. The most important thing is we offer full service restoration with limited power of attorney. That's part of the breach solution for the 4.2 million. That means if you do become a victim of identity theft, whether it's related to OPM or not, you can call our agents up. We fill out a limited power of attorney and we do all the work for you. So we call the courthouses and have the records expunged. We call the financial institutions and have the credit accounts removed. And that's the key thing, is to make sure you have that, because that's what makes the problem go away for the individuals. Because eventually everyone will be a victim of identity theft, and it doesn't have to be tied to OPM. But that will give them the peace of mind that they continue about their job, continue working, we'll take care of it, resolve it for them, and then we'll give them pretty much a clean bill of health when we're done.
And I think I know the answer to this question, but is this the kind of thing that people should have routinely, along with their household insurance and their car insurance?
I think you're seeing that, and you're actually seeing a lot of insurance companies get into this. It's dental, medical, health, home, life, identity protection, because the more and more we transact online, if you look at your iPhone and look at all the apps that have usernames and passwords, have credit cards. We took an Uber over here. I have a username and password and a credit card, and that's just the information that we're putting out there. It's all over the place. So yes, it is smart for someone to have a full identity protection plan in place.
All right. And Kevin, if they come to you again for the $21 million, do you feel like, well, I'll pass on this one, knowing what happened the last time, or would you go again for it?
Oh, I think we'd absolutely go again for it. And we're at a point where we have capacity. We've got over 260 people in the call center now servicing. Our wait times, our hold times are a minute, you know, sub 2 minute hold times. We're going to get to a point, quite frankly, here in the short term, where it's going to be just direct calling into the call center, because the call volume has, you know, dropped down a little bit. But, you know, we've got the right solution. We've got the right lessons learned from this one. So, yeah, we'd absolutely be, you know, welcome to looking at that. But again, we can't be forward looking, and it's certainly outside of our control. So.